Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Murray. Elizabeth is an author, photographer, painter, and garden designer. She is best known for her 25 years of work in helping to restore Monet's garden, photographing them. She uses her beautiful photography to help illustrate her workshops and lectures, which are filled with personal stories, garden metaphors, and warm humor. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, Elizabeth.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to success in public speaking?
Well, I think it began as a small child doing show and tell, and I think I never quite got over that. I'm one of six children, and it was always hard to get a word in edgewise, but when we could bring something to school and stand up in front of the class and tell about it, then that really encouraged me. And then later, I really got into oral reports as a child because I was a poor speller. Coming from an Irish family, I think storytelling was part of my background. So I think it started then, but it wasn't professional until 1986 when I got back from my year of working in France in Monet's garden, and I became the first director of the San Francisco Landscape Garden Show in San Francisco. I got invited to speak at the De Young Museum, and I had never spoken publicly except for to some fellow gardeners. So to have my first lecture at a major museum was a big deal for me. So someone working at the San Francisco Landscape Garden Show, a volunteer, her husband actually helped to train people in public speaking who are executives. So he was going to train a trainer, and he offered me a one-hour consultation for free. I was like, oh, perfect. And in this consultation, what he said is, okay, well, do you have your notes? Here's a podium. Stand up and give me a part of your talk. So I did that, and I started shuffling through my little index cards and saying, okay, well, Monet was born in 1876 and whatever it was, and just kind of went through the dates and when he moved to Giverny, and it was kind of stiff. He said, great, thanks so much. And tell me, what was your experience about? And first, he'd sort of warmed me up by asking personal questions in comfortable chairs. So then he said, okay, I'm going to show you two different demonstrations of different ways to talk. And unbeknownst to me, and this was 24 years ago, so technology wasn't like it was today, he opened up this window, this curtain, and he showed the screen, and he showed me chatting and just telling some funny stories or personal adventures that I had in Monet's garden. And then he showed me standing up all nervous with my index cards trying to say date. Which one do you like better? Of course I like the conversational one, but I was astounded. I was just totally shocked. So seeing myself gave me a real insight of how to develop a conversational style when I give talks. So that's kind of how I began.
So given this experience, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something that you're born with a knack for?
I think it's a both and. I think that some people have an ability to have a certain kind of self-confidence or presence that they're more comfortable speaking to others, or they've had a family upbringing like I described with Irish storytelling, that there's an awareness that this is something that you can create a spell or create an interest. But I really think it's a learned skill as well. And I think that the practice and how we develop it is really important. And I realize just small things like knowing your material, being well organized, coming early so I'm not diving in there 5 minutes before and being a nervous wreck, or how to pull ourselves together. Do you need silent time? Do you need to walk a little bit? How to take care of yourself physically so that you're not nervous when you speak. I like to speak from a heart center. I like to speak so I inspire others and I open up their heart. So sometimes in my first couple of sentences, depending on the group, I might actually get a lump in my throat. And of course I can't cry. The point is to speak from your heart and to inspire. So I have to kind of learn to go through that and deepen and go into my heart. So it's not just speaking from my head, but I also have to have all my facts correct. In the beginning, I wanted to keep on a certain rhythm and I didn't want to be interrupted by people's questions because then I'd get off or I'd get nervous. But now I can be much more calm and weave things. And if they want to hear more about paintings or plant material or how you propagate or little family stories of Monet or personal stories of mine, I can weave back and forth. So I think familiarity is really important. And that does take practice.
I think a lot of novice speakers, whether they want to do this as a career or just an aspect of their business or not, is that wanting to be so knowledgeable about what they're about to say that they want to memorize it. Mm. I think that creates a lot of the fear that is felt around public speaking. It's like, oh my God, am I going to forget what to say? Well, if you're allowing yourself to be flexible and say what comes naturally, as long as you know your topic, you should be okay.
And I think also you have authenticity that way. Unless you're good enough as a real actor, and then that's a different thing, why memorize? It's actually to really know and love your subject. And I'm fortunate because I do show beautiful slides. I speak on a lot of other subjects besides Monet, but that's the one that's most popular. But when I speak without slides, when I speak without pictures, and I just really try to read the audience and get to know them and do my homework to know not only what I'm going to be talking about, but who I'm going to be speaking to. So I know I'm speaking to them. It's not canned. It's really authentic. And I think people respond to authenticity and they respond to someone who is passionate and who's speaking from their heart and also, of course, knows their subject.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, I've got a funny story around memory. I competed in high school on the speech team, and I had been competing with my first speech, which was on earthquakes, and I'd been doing fairly well with it, and I'd gotten bored with it. So I decided to write a new speech, and this one was on memory, and I forgot it. And it was really embarrassing because I had gotten so used to knowing that this line comes after this line, coming after this line, that when I got to that point where I didn't remember what the next line was, I wasn't able to roll with it. And I didn't know enough about memory as a high school student to roll with it on a professional level. Yes, you want to know the main points of your speech, but you should be talking about something you know well enough that as long as you've memorized the main points, you can fill in all the blanks in between and flow.
And it depends, I think, a lot on your topic. If your topic needs certain kinds of dates and certain kinds of things that require memorization. But what I find is when we have a storytelling style or conversational style, then it's all enveloped. And so if you had that kind of self-confidence, you could have said in your memory talk, oh gosh, you know what I was going to say? I've just forgotten. And I think memory gets stopped when we're really nervous or stressed. It's interesting what will throw us off. And I think that over years, practicing meditation or breath or being rooted. I practice being rooted yet flexible. Or little things that help you get self-confidence, help you believe in yourself and feel a sense of presence and comfort in your presence. And I think being comfortable with how I dress so that then you're not like fidgeting with, oh God, this I look okay. So you are there.
And it's interesting that you mentioned dress because when you follow the rules of public speaking, they always tell you to dress a certain way. And yet I've found that some of the best public speakers, they dress what's comfortable for them. Some people are comfortable in a suit and a formal attire, whereas others will come out in a Hawaiian shirt and they're just as good because that's what's comfortable for them.
Well, again, it's something that's comfortable, but who is the crowd and what is the subject? Who are you? Are you a speaker that's just come from Hawaii that's talking about your big sailing trip or about your Hawaiian music or your designs that came from Japan and Hawaiian and Tahiti or whatever? Then it's totally appropriate. Are you speaking to a major business group and you're being paid $100,000 for your speech? I just think of it as like a costume, and I'm an artist. And I'm a gardener, so I often wear green. But how do I feel comfortable? But also, what helps me portray my image? And I'm kind of Monet colors or clothes from France.
Right. And that said, I've been to a business conference where one speaker wore a suit, and he looked great. And another person came in shorts and a ratty old T-shirt that had definitely seen better days. And although he knew his stuff, there was always something in the back of my mind that said, couldn't you have just worn a shirt that was newer?
Yeah. I mean, that does not seem like mutual respect for the audience.
Yeah, he was a little self-conscious because he's not used to public speaking, but there was a disrespect there of himself as well as the audience there. Yeah. I remember that just kept niggling at the back of my mind.
Yeah. Well, somebody, and that's maybe what you're doing with your book, but somebody needs to give him a little hint. You know.
Yeah. Wear a T-shirt and shorts. That's fine. Just one that looks new would be... Because it was like one of those ones with an iron-on where the iron-on is like all faded. You can't read it anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can understand wanting to wear your favorite shirt. I mean, I've got shirts in my closet that have holes in them, but I never want to let go because I love them so much, but I would not wear them on the stage.
No.
So imagine, if you will, that you are a public speaking superhero. What do you believe would be your main superpowers?
I think inspiration, me being inspired and me inspiring others. And I think being connected to my heart and being able to read the audience and to see what the audience is feeling, how they're reacting, what they're eager about, what lights their eyes up, being able to read that.
Interesting, you mentioned that third one is in your presentation, since you're sharing, I'm assuming, slides of your photographs, right?
Yes.
Isn't the room dark?
Yeah, it's dark, but I can still see my audience.
Okay.
And it depends on how big the group is, but I've spoken to up to 800, and I still read my audience. And I always speak before and after with the lights up. I always speak minimum 5 minutes, but often 10 minutes before we lower the lights. So that's really important for me to read the audience. And I can tell by my humor and if they're laughing and what kind of sense of humor they have. And I don't have like canned jokes, but I do know that there's certain things that I often weave in. Or if I feel like a response, if they're going, ooh, ah, or they're just like deadpan, they're not making any kind of response, let alone sparkly eyes. And also in my own self, I know, gosh, this is going well. Or I'm having to work on it because I'm not getting any energy back from the audience, or because maybe it's just an off day for me. So I feel that. And I think that that's one of the things that good lecturers, good superheroes, call it that. And there's ways, I think, even if you have an audience that is slow or kind of fidgety or maybe not as warm as you would like, how to warm them up. And I do that a lot, especially when I have very wealthy people that often come to my home, and I teach them and I give them talks, and then we do art and creativity. And I have some people, they've just flown in on their own jets. They have so much diamonds and jewelry. They have their own bodyguards that accompany them. They're people from real affluent kind of things. And they don't want to create. You're going to have us do something? We're not just going to hear a lecture? And when I can make them feel comfortable, and when I can make them feel inspired, and even get interested not only in creating their own art, but even get interested in some of the other things, like they'll look around my house and maybe I've had chevron oil, for example, and I could tell them stories about working in the Amazon rainforest and about indigenous cultures that would rather die than have oil dug there. And they actually change their mind, or they get inspired, or they open up, or someone in charge of testing of children, international group, that they will come and they'll say, this is so creative. Oh, I want my husband to come. And something like that, when you actually change their thinking, or I didn't know people lived this way, this is so great. That's like a superpower. When I can bring creativity to, I say, yeah, it's not just about being an artist. It's about bringing creativity to the way we think and the way we bring it to our families, our communities, and even how we vote. So those kind of inspirations, whether it's on a small scale, intimate scale, or really big scale, that to me is really doing a good job.
Now, what advice would you give someone if they want to develop these superpowers for themselves?
Well, I would advise them to decide to talk about something they're passionate about, something they enjoy talking about. Don't just start with a dry subject. If they're into photography or paintings or pictures or whatever, that often helps, because working with photography can help you organize your talk, and it will always be beautiful. I would always say to change your own slides. Don't have it pre-programmed, so that you can change your pace if you like to. I would have them learn their subject, but in a joyful way and in a broad way. So it's not just about facts, but it's also about stories. I would encourage them to listen to storytellers and even some stand-up comedians that are really good, so that they get a sense of timing, they get a sense of creating a atmosphere or creating like a magic,
right,
with timing and that kind of thing. Then just to start. So you can start with your friends and family. You can start with a small club that's around your community as a free public speaking. That's what I did before the DeYoung, is I gave a free talk at the San Francisco Arboretum, and that was my practice. And that really helped. One thing leads to another.
And there are lots of opportunities for people to do that. Even if they don't talk in front of a group, they could join like a Toastmasters group or some other public speaking club or group in their area. It's more than just practicing the words you say. It's practicing being in front of an audience.
Yes. And I think it's actually a powerful tool to do some mirror work, to actually be talking to yourself in front of a mirror. You actually see yourself. And now today it is much easier to do video. People have little small flip cameras or whatever.
Right.
Do that as well. But to see yourself, because oftentimes we think of ourselves as different than we actually are. So how are your hand gestures? And what the lighting is like on a pedestal, like if you have that to use, or how different microphones work so that you feel more comfortable. I'm only 5'3", so if they have a really tall pedestal to stand in front of with a tall microphone, and they have this kind of lighting that lights you up from underneath your chin, that is not so great.
No, no, it isn't.
I'll stand on like a little box if I have to be behind something, and then I'll want the lighting. I don't need to read notes, but I want the lighting to look okay so I'm not just like a dismembered head. You can ask for that. That gives you some comfort.
And I've seen some speakers, they just step away from the podium and stand next to it or in front of it. Or
if you have that kind of microphone.
Yeah, it all depends on the microphone, true.
How they wire you up. So I would prefer myself to have a lavalier where you have the little clip. And then you tuck it in. And even that, you have to kind of be aware of your dress. You know, like if I wear a lot of beads, I like wearing beads, but I have to be careful that I have something that it could click onto so it doesn't like clank on the beads. How my collar is, that it doesn't flap open and the little microphone kind of hits on something. And then sometimes you have to be aware of how the microphone is if you have different speakers on the stage so that you don't walk. It's such a disaster. When you walk in front of something and it squeaks. The one thing that's happened a lot recently, I always did slides for 25 years. Now it's all the digital. So how does that work? And being there ahead of time, because there, even in museums, there have been incredible problems with how their projector works with my, I use a Macintosh as well. And
right.
I bring in my own laptop and I have my own little cord, but I've had machines break down 3 times during my talk, and it wasn't my fault. It was nothing about me. So how to keep talking? Yeah, you might be sweating and feeling nervous, or even having all the slides stop all of a sudden. One time years ago, they opened up the slide carousels, and they dumped them, 2 slide carousels that were specially organized, and I had like 400 people, and they were late. So I had to give a talk with all my slides out of order. It was so nerve-wracking. And these were carefully orchestrated slides with one color, one texture, one piece of art going into another. And I just had to say, I teach non-perfection. I teach being spontaneous. So now I'm going to have to live it. These slides got all mixed up. I couldn't make anyone wrong. I couldn't say, please, you know, people were totally
Accidents happen.
Yeah, but it was very nerve-wracking. That's why it's really important to learn our subjects well, so well that if you're thrown these curveballs, that you can still be present. Because you have to be in love with the audience. You have to know that they are giving you their time, that they are there partially for entertainment or for information, or maybe they were dragged there by somebody else. So you want to give something that is inspiring. And it's of yourself, really. It's showing of yourself that makes a difference. And also I would say that we never know who's in our audience. And something that was remarkable in my first professional lecture at the De Young was that there was a publisher of my audience. And then he contacted me and offered to publish my photographs in calendars. And then the calendars led to books and 25-year relationship, which are part of my career. And one of the books is sold 250,000 copies, and another one sold 87,000 copies, and now we have a new book out, and it's just been a big part of my life. And then those books, of course, lead to other public speaking, and you know, never know how it's going to go. But so I would say always be treating it with respect, mutual respect, your own, and who's invited you, and who's in the audience.
Yes, definitely. There's that respectfulness where everyone wins. You win, the person who hired you wins, and the audience wins.
Yeah.
That's always the best. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing your unique insights with us today on public speaking superpowers.
Good. Yeah, it's a great topic. And I think people really want to connect. So I think being able to speak publicly is a real gift. It's a gift we can bring all over.
Yes. Well, this brings us to the end of today's episode of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on her picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.